Good evening, everybody. James McCanny here with my Science Hour. This is for July 27th, 2023, as we march along in this year. Wow, a lot of stuff to talk about tonight. I'll be talking about some comet science. Recently, I've been doing some commentary on current events, things like that, to get those covered. But I got to get back to some hardcore science here, so be prepared for that a little later in the show. First of all, and I like to keep people up to date on the archaeological end of things, a week or two ago I announced that Mexico was opening up a new city that it had been reconstructing here for a number of years. And I had actually been there physically in the 90s when it had first been discovered. Now, the story was that I was on a mission, one of my self-proclaimed missions, surveying Chichen Itza and Uxmal and Tulum and various other locations in the jungle down in the Yucatan-Quintana Roo area, and was on a day trip myself out of Chichen Itza on a back road. This is a little back road, and I probably couldn't even find it today if I wanted to. But anyway, I'm driving along, and all of a sudden come up to this ruins, which is out in the middle of nowhere. There was kind of a stick dropped over a couple posts, and that was the gate. There was nothing there. And so I got out of the car, parked it there, and I thought, well, I'm going to go in and walk around and see what this is all about. Big city, you know, I could see off in the distance, but heavily overgrown also. So when it's in that condition, there's not a lot to see, but it's interesting. You can see the big structures, things like that, and maybe some glyphs outstanding that were not covered with the jungle growth. So, and I didn't get more than two or three steps out of the car, and all of a sudden up pulls this truck, like one of those that they haul fruit in for when you're out in the country, if they have apples or something, a pretty good sized truck. Probably had about 15 guys in the back end, and there were the two guys. It was like one of those trucks, like Indiana Jones type of trucks, you know. And but open bed in the back and full of guys with guns. And the guy pops out of the passenger seat, the driver sits in there, and everybody's in the back is leaning over, like with the guns completely visible. And the guy gets out, and he's got a gun, and he walks up towards me, and he's, you know, okay, you just got to leave. And so I, you know, politely waved, not a problem. I got in my car and drove away. But of course they were there to protect against someone in doing something invasive work on this property, this, you know, which they guard very highly. But what amazed me is on my trek out on this little country road, I didn't see anything or anybody. There was nothing there. I mean, there was not a ranch or a house or even an old, you know, a hut of any kind. I didn't see anything. So how these guys got a wind of me being there, I don't know. Anyway, but that site is now open to the public. It's a new site. It's one of the most important cities of the Mayans. And now they're the president of Mexico. Let me see if I can just pull this up here, give you an idea. His name is, the president is Andres Manuel López Obrador. They call him AMLO, A-M-L-O. He's got a mnemonic for his name. It's so long. But anyway, he visited some of these new sites that are opening up, and there's four new ones opening up in the Mayan Riviera. Two of them are at the site of Tulum, which when I was a kid, when I was young, I wouldn't call me exactly a kid. I was, 22 years old, maybe? I was teaching in Mexico City. I lived there. Not a lot of details, but anyway, I was teaching. That was my first job after college because I decided not to go directly to grad school. I just, I just needed something. I was just kind of like, the physics is a tough subject. Takes a lot of attention, and I was like, okay, I need some time off. So I called up the school that I was set up to go to grad school, and I said, look, I'm just not quite ready mentally for this excruciating, 4, 5, 6 years of grad school to get my PhD. And they said, not a problem. We'll hold your fellowship here for 3 years. And if you, anytime you want to come back, just walk in the door and you're here. Okay. I took advantage of that. So I decided, okay. So I went to Mexico and I got a job teaching there. And so when I went back to the United States after getting the job, I returned. I came with a brand new Ford Econoline van, window van, with windows, tinted windows all the way around, an air conditioner in it, but nothing in the van. It was just empty. And interesting, my mom gave me a foam pad. She went out and bought this foam pad, and then I put some like old, like, well, I bought it, everything was new, but it was indoor outdoor carpeting, the kind that people used to put on their deck or in their car, waterproof. That's what I had in it when I left for Mexico. And by the way, this kind of a funny story that goes along with that. I bought the van. It's like August. The school year in Mexico City starts in like a month. And so I go in and I pick up the van, brand new. It's got like 10 miles on it, or something. And the guy tells me in service, he says, you got to bring this back in 7,000 miles so we can adjust the front torsion bars. And I'm going, well, I'm going to be going, leaving the country here, and I ain't coming back. So I'm not sure what to do. And he says, well, we can't adjust them until you get that mileage on them, because the old Fords had a cross I-beam front suspension. Anyway, if you know about that, whatever. But anyway, so I, okay, what am I going to do? So I went and I picked up a friend of mine. This is, we're in Minnesota, where I lived at the time, and drove out to California to visit another friend who was in the San Francisco area. So we drove up and down the coast in California and put, and so I come back a week later, or maybe 10 days later, come back to the service garage where I bought the vehicle. And I came in and I got out of the truck, and a service guy came up to me and I said, I got the 7,000 miles on the car. And I don't think I quite had 7,000, but there was a lot. And I said, so you can do the adjusting the I-beams. He goes, no, you don't understand. 7,000, not 700. And I said, well, yeah, it's 7,000 that I get miles I have on this thing. And he's like, no way. So he goes in and he looks at the odometer, and it has like 7,000 miles on it. And he screams into the work area of the car dealership, where all the workers were. He says, hey, this guy just put 7,000 miles on this car in 1 week. And they all knew the car. They knew me, And so they all had a big laugh over that. So they adjusted the front I-beams, and I went, there I went off to Mexico. And so I had this amazing, great van that I traveled around Mexico. So I had a place to sleep no matter where I went. I had kind of like my own hotel. And so I went all over Mexico. I was everywhere, and to the West Coast, the East Coast, to the Yucatan Peninsula. And I spent Christmas vacation from the school there where I was teaching. I spent the Christmas vacation in Quintana Roo, which was a territory at the time, and camped out at the Tulum ruins. And now, of course, it's a big tourist area with, I don't even like to go there. It's just kind of, knowing that over 50 years ago, I was there, and they had just made a road, the very first road connecting Puerto Juarez down to Tulum, and they made it out of crushed seashells. They had these big pits alongside the road where they dug up all this crushed limestone and seashells, and that's what they made the road out of. And I had to wait a couple of days. There was another vehicle there, a guy that was filming for National Geographic, was waiting there also, and we together drove down this road. and there are still pieces, bits and pieces of that road you can see off next to the highway between what is now Cancun and Tulum. But Cancun wasn't even there at the time. There wasn't even a, the only thing there was an old rickety wooden hotel at Puerto Juarez. This is over 50 years ago, and of course, now it's insane, with literally thousands of five-star hotels lining that whole coastline. So at any rate, Tulum now is opening up four new sites. Well, and one is not really at Tulum. It's called Ixcabal, and it is south of Tulum, further south, and also on the coastline. So very interesting. Sometime I'm going to go take a look at that, but they say that was a much bigger city than Tulum. It was like these trading cities where the trade would come in and land. And so anyway, but the Maya go back thousands of years, like the Incas. You know, this idea that man crossed the Bering Strait and populated the Western Hemisphere, just, I mean, fairy tale science. Never could possibly be true. I mean, they were teaching that when I was a kid. And I looked at that, and, you know, there's something that doesn't make sense about this. And, of course, the Western Hemisphere populations were massive. When Columbus arrived, there were millions and millions of people living in these cities, and they decimated them all. And it's one of the great unsung moments of history is how they've tried to hide that absolute decimation of these people. The Aztecs, the Maya were still very strong. They weren't as strong as they were historically, but but the Incas, good grief, the Incas were the ones that collected the most amount of gold, and they're the ones that really provided the Spanish with the wealth that drove them, and all of that gold went back to Spain, and the British took a lot of it also, went back to England, the Portuguese, and all of it, literally all of it, went back to Rome. And that's what was the founding basis, still the founding basis, of the Vatican Bank, the Rothschild Bank, the International World Bank cartel that operates and runs basically, you know, they ran all of the governments throughout history, going way back, where they would arrange marriages, arrange wars, peace agreements, etc. And they basically, you know, controlled. So right now you have the Windsors, which are Germans, as the king and queen of England. Those are German ancestry that go back into Northern Europe that are now in the king and queen seat in England. But they sit on the power, and that was made by an arrangement by the Vatican, a marriage that brought them together. The House of Windsor is not original House of England at all. Anyway, enough of that. But another archaeological story here. In Luxor, Egypt, just recently, a city was discovered, unearthed, but apparently the desert sands blew the right direction and had been completely covering this city, a major-scale city very near the current city of Luxor, which is about 500 kilometers south of Cairo on the Nile River. So anyway, very interesting. But what's bizarre about the release of that story is they immediately put a 3,000-year-old city. You know, wait, where did they get this from? Whose rabbit hat did they pull that number out of? You know, the city is discovered. They go there and they look at it, and there's like things like kids' dolls and everyday things of everyday usage there and covered by sand. And then they go, well, this was not caused by any kind of natural disaster. Boy, they want to keep that story hush hush. And that's one of the big things that happens right now with archaeology. The two things they want to make sure that you, the public, don't understand is, number one, the true dating of these archaeological treasures. They go back much, much farther, because when you realize that, you realize that the history of man as it's taught could not possibly be true at all. The idea that man, you know, came out of Africa, these little, the Leakeys with their, you know, million-year-old little people, homos, you know, whatever. And then you've got the idea that then they crescendoed in the valley of Mesopotamia between the Tigris and Euphrates River, and all the races of man emanated out of there over the last 7,000 years. Complete nonsense. And then, of course, they don't want to include that there was any catastrophic events, especially from outer space. In other words, the Velikovsky Venus event. And so archaeology, and I saw this when I was at Cornell. They had just opened up, of course, they had a big archaeology department, but they had just opened up the astroarchaeology department, or archaeoastronomy, I should put it that way. That's the way it's pronounced, archaeoastronomy department. And when I was in my verbal battle on campus with the NASA yo-yos, the Joe Vavirkas and the Carl Sagans and the other people there, I went into the office of all of these professors all around campus and talked to them. And the guy who was the brand new head, I think it was about a two-year-old department, brand new, stood up and shook my hand. He said, "Look, you know, I know what you're doing. I know what you're going through. These people destroy careers. They have their line of propaganda that they put out there. Nobody can oppose them." And he said, "I really respect what you're doing." And he said, "But I can't say anything because I'd lose my department. I would lose my tenure. I can't say anything." So much for freedom of speech and tenured professors. As long as they say the right thing, they can keep their tenure. Okay, so anyway, but that's the story with this new site at Luxor. And they do put a name on it, which is ridiculous. I don't even want to repeat it or give it the time of day. But another major archaeological find on the streets. Okay, record heat wave. Okay, let's look at this. Let's look at this. Now, climate change data, climate change science, if you want to call it that, is one of the biggest pieces of garbage ever. Now, there are hot temperatures, there are high temperatures, and I've talked to people in various places. But I happen to be in a place that's extremely cold right now, and colder than normal. And so what they do is they simply redirect, using the manipulation of low pressure cells, they manipulate the wind that is coming from the south into areas of population areas. And then they say, "Look how hot it is," not realizing that over there where this air is coming from, the cold air is being drawn into that area, and it's very much colder. So much less than 10% of the world's surface area, that includes the oceans, and I would say probably less than 1% of the land surface, less than 1% of the surface area of the world, is being actually actively monitored. And from this, they're making the generalization that the world is heating, the whole world is heating up. And it's just garbage science. It's to make headlines, to make you think, because, you know, what's the mentality of the average person on the street? "Oh, it's hot where I am. It must be global warming." And they pump that into the people to the point where they believe it. What else can I say? Just, once again, garbage science, garbage in, garbage out. And the way they guide the low-pressure cells is with laser satellites. This is the current method. And by the way, if you listen to some of the more popular people who've taken over this, you know, the sky is falling, the sky is falling agenda, what you'll find is that they really don't talk about the real issues. They do not talk about the real issues. And then there's people who are saying that we have global cooling going on because of the chemtrail spraying. At any rate, it's craziness out there, just absolute craziness. I'm going to make a comment here, and you normally don't deal with politics, but this is not politics. This is based on the two-tier system of justice in the United States and the Hunter Biden laptop. Now, you couldn't, unless you live under a rock someplace, you couldn't pass a day without hearing something about this in the news media. And so whether they're defending it and saying there's nothing there or saying that, protecting Joe Biden, who is in on all of these, nefarious business deals, not even business deals, just selling access, as it's called. But here's the thing. Thousands of other crimes against the United States, including treason and including, bribery, including money being put under the table to get policy put in place. That's the smokescreen, the Hunter Biden smokescreen. And you'll find outfits like, say, Fox News covering this every day, every day. And I really don't watch it. I see enough to know that that's what they're covering. And just on and on relentlessly. Oh, and what, and the congressional hearings trying to get to the bottom of all of this. All of this taking up everybody's attention, and it's a smokescreen. While the kids of, Pelosi and Schumer and all of these other people are involved in all kinds of unscrupulous dealings and people who are nameless. Those are the people you see. I've often said that if you want to know who the real people are running the, say, military industrial complex, etc., you don't see their names. You don't know who they are. You never see their name in lights. So the Hunter Biden thing, he's going to be paid off. He's going to live a royal life, continue to do his drugs and sex and whatever, all everything else that under the sun, and nothing's going to happen to him. But they're running a smokescreen factory for everybody else that's going on with the kickbacks coming back from Ukraine. The Ukraine war is nothing but just a kickback factory for arms sales, and what happens to those arms? Half of it, or a good percentage of it, does not arrive at Ukraine to be used. It's being sold on the black market. Just corruption at the highest levels, wall to wall, ceiling to floor, Washington, D.C., and on this world scale. So, at any rate, the Hunter Biden laptop story is a smokescreen. That's all it is. That's all it's ever been. And what else is going on? What's the real news? The U.S. dollar has dropped 25%. This is if you look at currencies around the world, which I do on a regular basis, not because I'm a currency investor. It's because I want to see the trends and things like that. But anyway, the U.S. dollar against say, the Swiss franc, a lot of third world countries, against the Canadian dollar, which is never, it has lost a lot, which is actually funny because the Canadian dollar is never really strong. No offense against Canadians, but against the dollar, it has not been very strong for a long, long time, decades. But on a world scale, the U.S. dollar has lost 25% since April of this year. It's just in a free fall, and that free fall continues, and it's going to continue. Okay, I want to get this in before I forget about it. Now, for about a week now, about maybe a week and a half, I had a warehouse moving sale on the MR5 whole house water filter system. It's what I call the best deal. The MR5 whole house water filter, stainless steel casing, super high quality, removes toxins, the laundry list of thousands of toxins from your water. Plus, the UV sterilizer that comes with two bulbs that gets you out 2 years, and then an extra filter pack for the MR5. We call it the best deal on the web page. Typically, that was selling for $2,350. And literally right now, it's $1,000 off. And the reason was we had a warehouse moving sale to reduce some stock, so we didn't have to make two trips. and just as a calculated. And a lot of people got into this. And then I got some calls from people that said, please, I don't have the money right now. Can you give me a little more time? And said, okay. So what I've done is I've set out the limit of this sale to tomorrow night, Friday night, midnight Pacific time. So that's midnight, the last time slot of the United States. Midnight, Friday night, tomorrow night, at Pacific time, midnight. So that's it. And if you get into the webpage, it's jmccwaterfilters.com. That's plural. jmccwaterfilters.com. Go to the MR5 page, or you can just use this URL. It's a quick URL to get you to the MR5 sales page. It's mymr5.com. So mymr5.com. And five is the number five. So mymr5.com. It takes you right to the sales page. Get your order in. It's a crazy sale. And I'm, like I say, I'm keeping this because there's some people who just can't afford it. And a lot of people are taking advantage of this to get this system in their home. It's not a water softener. If you have a water softener issue with, you know, high mineral content in your water, you would need a water softener also. And by the way, this is what I tell people about water softener. If you got an old water softener, get rid of it. It's not working. It's chewing up a lot of salt and flushing that back down into the drain really bad. So get yourself a new water filter, or a new water softener, I should say. But just go to Home Depot. That's my advice to people. Go Home Depot or one of those big box stores. You know, I don't know who all sells them, but just get yourself a water softener at the big box store. And when the plumber comes to put in your MR5 system, have him put everything all in at once. That's my advice. Because there's a lot of unscrupulous companies out there that sell water softeners and call them water filters. And they're not. They're not a water filter by any stretch of the imagination. There's nothing filter about them. And they remove maybe one or two things like chlorine, and they call it a water treatment system and all of this. No. In today's toxic world, you got to get rid of all of these toxins that are in the water, and the MR5, that's what it's designed to do. So, okay, I'm not going to say any more. All the details on the webpage. There's frequently asked questions section. There's a lot of information. There's a couple free ebooks, boatload of information. Once again, the webpage, jmccwaterfilters.com. Okay, now I'm going to talk about electric vehicle fires. Oh my goodness, this topic. There's a video that just came out. It's on YouTube, and it's a whole series of street fires where the cars are burning on the street. There was just a fire in Florida where this couple, I think it was a high-end car. It was like, was it a Mercedes-Benz or something? And anyway, they had this loaner car because their regular gasoline car was in the shop getting fixed. So they have this EV, electric vehicle, Mercedes, I think it was a Mercedes, in their garage. And this baby catches fire and burned their house down in Florida. I mean, just they were out. Nobody got killed, luckily. But good grief. Then you have a series of buses that are parked in a parking lot. And one of these babies goes up in smoke. And what happens when these EV cars start to burn, they have sometimes it'll shoot out the side. It'll burn a hole in the side of the car. And you have this 4 or 5 foot just high intensity fire coming out the side of the vehicle. And this bus that was on the end caught fire from its battery pack burning, going up in flames, caught the next bus on fire. That one caught the next bus on fire, caught the next bus. All these buses were sitting in a row and burned them all down. And then you have the Nikola parking lot where these semis were parked, and one catches fire and then burned out the rest of them. And it was like when these fires take place, it takes them like a day to stand there, 50 firefighters for a day trying to contain this fire and just keep it from burning everything down in sight. But now here's the point. And by the way, I just got this in, a listener sent it in. a cargo ship off of Norway. And I've seen these cargo ships go up in flames where they're full of EV cars. And one of them starts to burn and it just burns the whole ship up down. But there's a ship right now, as we speak, off the coast of Norway, ablaze, an entire cargo ship full of EV cars coming. I don't know where they're going to or from or whatever. But that's going to, one person was killed in the fire. And I don't know if everybody got off. Okay, I don't know much about but this entire ship is burning up because one EV car on that ship caught fire and is burning down. And now here's what's going on with these ships. Because of the sea air and the conductivity of sea air and the salt that's in the air and spray, there's, you know, it's like high humidity, shorting out these battery packs on these cars, and that's when they start going up in smoke. They short out due to the high humidity, high salt content of sea air, and this is going to keep happening. So anyway, but the reason, you can find this on the internet, so that's not amazing news, but what is amazing news is that this is going to happen on a crowded freeway someday. People are going to be, you know, L.A. freeway. Have you ever, if you've ever been to L.A., that freeway that goes down to San Diego, what is it, 6 or 8 lanes wide both ways? I am, my goodness, full of cars, bumper to bumper, just barely moving. If one of those vehicles goes up, or even worse, a bus or a big truck goes up in smoke, oh my goodness. And that starts catching cars next to it on fire. Now, here's the scenario. An EV car is going to burn very hot in its locale, and it's explosive. Some of these things have violent, violent explosions. But if it catches a car on fire that has a gasoline gas tank, that is much more explosive. And once these cars start going up in smoke, there's going to be no way out. I've been on the crowded freeway like Miami or L.A. or New York, and a lot of times the cars are so densely packed that you can't get your door open. You could not open your door to get out of the car and run away. I mean, this is how packed these freeways are. You have a big truck next to you or a truck tire that's 4 inches away. You can't get your door open to get out and run away. And then you got maybe some mom with a couple of kids in car seats in the back. Can't get back there to get them out and try and what's a mom going to do with 2 little kids trying to get them out of the car seat while this raging fire is going on next to them? This is a disaster where hundreds, if not thousands of cars could go up in smoke, and there's no way to get emergency vehicles out there. A helicopter flying in and dropping a little water would do nothing but exasperate the situation. I hate to say it, but this is going to happen. This is going to happen. It has not happened yet, but it's going to happen. And, you know, first of all, what should people do if they see up in the rearview mirror or up in front of them, they see a fire going on? It's like everybody has to get out of their car. They have to help people. Like if you see a woman with 2 kids in the car and car seats, get those kids out of there and help the woman carry those kids down the road, just try and get off the freeway. A lot of freeways are elevated where for miles and miles, you can't get off the freeway. You know, there's no walking path to get off that freeway. And I mean, we're going to have 1,000 cars go up in smoke on a crowded freeway. It's going to happen. And so all I can say is in the United States, people never prepare for anything. Other things that need to preparation is a volcanic eruption at Yellowstone. I've been talking about that for years. Actually took it up to the congressional level. A friend of mine, John Moore, I said, John, take this and try and contact people. Get no response from these Congress people. They're just idiots. They don't, you know, they're marching down too many wrong roads. Let's put it that way. And the big issues are never confronted. How about a tsunami from the Canary Islands that would come into the entire east coast of the United States, heavily, heavily populated? One-third of the population of the United States is on that eastern seaboard. Another third is on the western seaboard, and another third is mixed throughout the center of the country. But a big tsunami wave coming in on the east coast of the United States would go inland many, many miles. That would just, in a six-hour time frame. Nobody talks about that. When have you heard a presidential candidate stand up and say, hey, we got to do something? It's like a fire alarm going off. You got to get up and get out of the building. You know, if you're eating a piece of pie, you can't sit there and eat the piece of pie and then get out of the building. No, you got to get your butt up now and get out of that building. In the same way with EV fires on a crowded freeway, you got to get up. You got to help other people. Imagine people in cars that are in wheelchairs and, oh my goodness, people in big trucks with a big load of flammable material. I mean, just, or a, how about a gas tanker truck locked into this maze of cars on a crowded freeway? And what's that thing goes up in smoke? Oh my goodness. No, this is a mega disaster waiting to happen. And when it happens, everybody's going to go, oh, gee, why didn't anybody think about this? How come this could happen? Didn't anybody, you know, and then there'll be congressional investigations for the next 10 years. A bunch of idiots. And, you know, you don't have to be a Harvard graduate to see this coming. Oh, my goodness. So I'm not going to go on and on, but something has to be done about this. Because it's going to happen. It's going to happen, and it's going to be horrific. And it can be prevented. And if nothing else, people could be trained on how to react, what to do, get out of your car, move to the nearest place where you can get off the freeway, help other people, little old ladies, little old men, get them out of there, because all those cars are going to go up in smoke. You know, I mean, it could be as bad as 5,000 cars going up in smoke. But you, the thing is, okay, that's something that you can deal with later, but the loss of life and the fact that nobody is planning on this or trying to teach people how to get, you know, how to manage this. Get out of your car, help other people, get off the freeway, get away from all those cars. And I just see this happening. I don't know what to do about it for my little radio show here. If you can get some politicians in line or governors or whatever, this is something that has to be dealt with. Okay, the next topic, what I think is very interesting, what is more valuable? And I'm going to go through kind of a laundry list here first. Stored food, gold or silver, hard assets like cars, houses, refrigerators, real estate, things for rental, excess real estate, not only where you live. That would be the first tier of real estate, is someplace where you can live, or you, at least you have a mortgage, you can stay there, nobody's throwing you out as long as you make the mortgage payment, or real estate that's paid off, that's one step better, or real estate, excess real estate that you rent out. What is that valuable to you? How about water and food that you have to eat? Because none of these other things are going to make much, be much value if you don't have good water and food, etc. And how are you going to maintain that long term? Do you have a way of providing food on a long term basis? How about living on land? Let's say you have a certain amount of money. Would it be better, and this is, you know, for the average person, say $500,000 to invest. Would you be better off putting it into gold or into a farm where you could live and it would grow your food, everything you need for your family to exist for a long period of time? And so the question is, what has more value, the silver? So let's look at this for just a minute. If you have gold, you can't eat it. It does not, it may appreciate in value, that's fine, or it may hold its value against other things. Like right now, I talked about the U.S. dollar doing a nosedive, 25% loss since April, and being not only the reason for that is because the United States is tanking on the world scale, because countries like Russia and China and hundreds of other countries are joining an alliance to finally get rid of the United States, which is a story unto itself. Okay, but gold would ride through there and keep its value, potentially increase in value relative to monetary standards. But can you eat it? Can you store it up and then eat it tomorrow? No. Is it going to become more valuable? Let's look at real estate. Real estate is, certain areas is raising in value. Other places, it's being reduced in value. It depends on where it is. And so, but let's look at how the way things are today in your life. Not my life, not the guy down the street, in your life. If you have a certain amount of assets, the very first thing you should do is have a place to live, and it should be with conditions so that you can have clean water and good food for a long period of time, not just this week. So that's your very first requirement, and especially if you have a family. You have to look out for them. The next thing would be to have a land where that land can produce food. And that would be one of the big essentials, having land. In that case, that land is much more valuable than gold because it can produce a product year after year after year, which gold cannot do. And so you're being your own source of food. Now, let's look at a group of people called the Amish. And this is where this is going. There's a tremendous movement today. And 10 years ago, people would have called them preppers and then made fun of them. There were actually TV shows that made fun of preppers, made them look like a bunch of dumb hillbillies out, with conspiracy theories. But as things turn out, now people are realizing that the people that got the right formula are the Amish. They live in their community. They don't interact with the economy other than on a bulk scale. They don't have TV. They don't have radio. I once visited an Amish community, and after visiting them, there were kids in the classroom. And I talked to them for a while, and I said, I'll send you my books and my DVDs and everything. They said, only hardbound books. So I did send them my hardbound books, but nothing electronic. No discs, no ebooks. Nothing electronic, which is interesting. But the Amish take the profit that they have from their farming, and they have relatively primitive, they have a very limited technological equipment that they use for farming or processing food or cutting trees or whatever they're doing. But they take their profit and they buy other land. That's what they do, because that other land then will produce. So now what they're doing is they're growing exponentially for every piece of property. Because of that piece of property making money every year, they can buy another piece of property with that original piece of property. Plus, the property they just purchased is now doing the same. So they're growing, and they're not spending money in the traditional sense. They make their own clothes. They live a very conservative lifestyle, and it turns out that they're extremely healthy because they're not eating. And in fact, there's a big attack going on right now with the Amish trying to prevent them from selling their food to the public. And this has been going on for a number of years, trying to force the public into buying GMO food, etc. So the GMO corporations and the powers that be that control them don't want people eating good food. They want you eating their food. Bill Gates wants you eating worms that he grows in his laboratory. You know, that's the insanity that's going on today. So anyway, I'm not going to carry this on because I want to get on to some comet science here. But the stored, once again, I'll read through my list here. What's more valuable? Stored food, because in a case of emergency, your stored food is going to run out. How about gold or silver? Hard assets, cars, houses, etc., real estate, water, food, other essentials, and then living on land that is your own land that can produce. And then also just health. What are you doing to maintain good health? The modern way of 72 shots now. John Moore corrected me. I thought there were 69 shots, 72 shots that kids have by the time they're 16 years old. And that's why they're all messed up. They're full of these toxins. And the reason the medical community gives it to them is because they know for the rest of their lives, they're going to be a patient. They're going to be walking into that door. They're going to be given more prescriptions and more prescriptions and more prescriptions on infinitum. And until these people finally fall over and die. So it's good business for the medical community to get these kids full of shots so they're sick and they've got a guaranteed patient for life. Okay, on to the next topic. Oh, just a quick thing. There's the movie Apocalypto, and I saw this movie quite a while ago, 2006. But a very good movie. If you have kind of a weak stomach, you might tend to not watch it. But it's a story about the Mayan, and it's very factual. That's the thing, because they have wars amongst their very warlike people, the Mayan. And so anyway, this is a just like the day in the life type of story about this Mayan family. And their little group of people living off in the jungle until one day the other shoe drops, as they say. It's called Apocalypto, Mel Gibson producer. Very good movie. Okay, about comets. Now, if you're not familiar with my work, or if you've forgotten, comets are not dirty snowballs. Never were, never will be, never have been. And so a comet is the discharge of the solar capacitor by some object in space. It doesn't have to have ice on it. It can be rocky. It could have ice on it. But the discharge of the solar capacitor by some object, and I'm not going to go into the scientific aspect of that, but all of the planets, including planet Earth that we happen to live on, have tails. And they've been misappropriated to be called magnetic tails. Well, there are planets that do not have magnetic fields, like Mercury and Venus, for example, which have tails. But how could it be called a magnetic tail? That's what they originally thought about planet Earth, because there are electric currents associated with it. But basically, remember that NASA doesn't recognize those. NASA thinks that magnetic fields in space just exist on their own. They just happen to be there. Just like, just like ice cream at the soda fountain shop. They just happen to be there. Don't know how they got there. Don't know why the magnetic fields exist, but they're just there. They're self-creating, self-sustaining, and are just there. That's according to NASA. But no, the real reason is because the Earth, like any other object in the solar system, is discharging the solar capacitor. This leads to some amazing properties with planets that have atmospheres and some other properties like moons. An association that was made by Stan Dermot. He was one of the really good astronomers at Cornell when I was there, one of the honest, really nice person. And he left, I think he's at a university in Florida, head of an astronomy department there. He made the observation that there's an association between the planets that have moons and magnetic fields. If the planet has a moon, it has a magnetic field. If it does not have a moon, it does not have a magnetic field. It's a one-to-one correlation. And so in the extent and the size of the magnetic field, everything is related to the size and extent of the moon and the moon's orbit. So you have Jupiter with all of these moons, or Saturn with all of these moons. And additionally, they have their own fusion reaction up in the upper atmosphere, which was proven by the Voyager spacecraft when they saw the proton winds coming up off of Jupiter. It was in the data, very clear. And after the Brad Smith announced that, actually in one of the science publications that went along with the Voyager probes, that went dark. It was like nobody could talk about that anymore, that Jupiter had a proton wind, meaning it had active fusion in the atmosphere. But at any rate, the moon system, so that, what I'm saying is that there are other factors where Saturn and Jupiter have active fusion going on in their atmosphere, which creates an entirely their own capacitor, their own capacitor, which can be discharged by the moons and gives them an electric field, which then drives the magnetic field of the planets, Saturn and Jupiter. And so, but what's interesting about Saturn, Jupiter, and Earth specifically, and also to a lesser degree Uranus and Neptune, but they have bands that are in the upper atmosphere. And on Earth, we call them the jet streams. They're upper atmospheric bands. The equatorial stream is electrons, and it goes in a counterclockwise direction. Actually, if you're looking from the north, it's in a clockwise direction. It goes against the wind patterns that are at the equator, which are easterly. But the jet stream is in a westerly direction. Okay, and so that's what brings the hurricanes, etc., to the west, and is the discharge source for the hurricanes and cyclonic storms, electric atmospheric electricity, etc. So, excuse me. I don't like doing that on the air, but that one caught me by surprise. So at any rate, the equatorial band of Earth goes in a westerly direction, and it's primarily electrons. The mid-latitude jet streams, and the ionospheric jet streams, are in the easterly direction and are positive ions. So those magnetic fields couple, and then you go up to the poles. The polar circular patterns are in the westerly direction again, and that's what causes the auroras. That's the primary source of auroras, where those electric bands are attracting the positive ions coming out of the solar wind, and they flood down into the Earth's atmosphere, causing the aurora borealis. Okay, so now you go out to Jupiter, and Jupiter has what I've counted 13 bands. And these are counter-rotating bands. The equatorial band is like Earth, it goes westerly. The next band up goes easterly. The next bands up and down go westerly. The next bands up go easterly and westerly, and they alternate like that. Those are coupled magnetic fields. Those are electrical currents which couple to drive the plasma magnetic field in the atmosphere of the planets. And when you have a solar storm, for example, you can see, you know, on planet Earth, if there's a solar storm, you can take a Boy Scout compass, put it on a table, and watch that needle go back and forth. Because it's not the geomagnetic field, which is fixed in the crust mantle of the Earth, iron and nickel primarily. That's not the main source of the magnetic field. The magnetic field is due to the electrical currents in the ionosphere, in the Van Allen belts outside of that, and then in one more layer out in the Earth's plasma magnetic field. There's five layers. I talk about this in my books. So the end result is, and so you might say, I thought you were going to talk about comets. Yes, very much. All of the planets are acting as comets, discharging the solar capacitor. And the part of this structure is the tail. So all of the planets have tails. Only some of the planets have magnetic fields, which gives other characteristics. But a regular comet has an electric field around the nucleus, and the end result of that is a Dubai shield that gathers and holds charged particles in a cloud, in a spherical cloud around the nucleus. And you can see this around comets. You can see that hydrogen, it's primarily hydrogen, ionized hydrogen, singly ionized hydrogen molecules, and that's where the blue line, you might call it a green-blue line, comes from in the spectrum of comets around the nucleus. It's the blue line of hydrogen. That's what it is. And if you look at the hydrogen spectrum and you look at blue-green comet, the auroras, or the auras around the comet nucleus, they're the same color. I mean, you can visually see that. So at any rate, a little bit of comet science tonight. I'll continue with more of that in the future. But anyway, it's kind of fun to talk about this with the general public, because you can see pictures, and very often you see comets coming into the solar system with a blue-green head right around the comet nucleus, and that's what it's from. Okay, just a quick reminder. Also, remember, I have a book that's right now selling on Amazon. It's called The Real History of Man and Earth, Myths, Magic, and Mayhem. It's available for, I think it's $19.95, or it might be $13.95, the hardcover. Available also on my webpage in ebook format. That's the jmccsci.com webpage. That's seven letters, jmccsci.com. Also, I want to encourage people to listen to this show on shortwave. If you're listening to the archives, if you're listening in some other location, that's great. I appreciate that. But get a shortwave radio. Tune in to WWCR Nashville, Tennessee, Tower Number 2, this 6 p.m. Thursday evening. I've been at that time slot for 23 years and ongoing commercial-free. But listen on shortwave, because there might be a day when the Internet is not available. That's the reason. Remember, the MR5 sale ends tomorrow night, midnight Pacific time. Tremendous deal on the MR5, best package, best deal package. And that sale, when it ends, you'll never, ever, ever going to see those kind of prices ever again. Remember, that webpage is jmccwaterfilters.com, or go directly to the sales page by going to mymr5.com. That's mymr5.com. This is James McCanney. This is my Science Hour, and as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.